Welcome to Public Health Matters with Dr. Christina M. Madison, the founder and CEO of the Public Health Pharmacist, PLLC, a public health consulting firm. She is passionate about spreading knowledge on public health in order to create healthier and happier communities.
Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Christina Madison, and today I have a fantastic guest, Dr. Ed Cohen from Pharmacy Times, and we are kicking off our inaugural episode of the Public Health Matters podcast, which is being featured on Pharmacy Times. So with that being said, thank you so much, Ed, for joining me today. I am so excited to dive into this discussion with you, especially since we just saw each other for the first time in person at the APHA annual meeting about 2 weeks ago.
Well, thank you, Christina, and it's wonderful to be here with you. I'm excited to engage in this conversation. We have had snippets of this conversation, both virtually and in person. And now it's our opportunity to put this all together and bring it to a wider audience, share our thoughts.
Thank you again for having me on as your guest on your podcast, Moving the Needle, which has, you know, I think really helped pharmacists understand and continue to stay up to date with the latest information regarding vaccination. So thank you again for having me as a guest.
Well, it was our pleasure. And we didn't just have you as a guest for one episode. We were so engaged in our conversation that we now have a part one and a part two. So it was a great conversation, very lively discussion. And I look forward to part two when it launches very soon.
Fantastic. So let's dive into some of these discussion points that I really think are important, especially as we're seeing the pandemic landscape change. So the first thing that I wanted to talk with you about is, you know, as we see, you know, mask restrictions going away and, you know, the whole country really just opening back up. And for all intents and purposes, I feel like the general public is decided that COVID is no longer a problem and COVID is no longer a thing. So with that being said, we're probably going to see the emergency declaration stopped or halted or suspended in the near future. What are your thoughts about how the profession of pharmacy is going to operate sort of post-emergency declaration? And what do you see as like the landscape of pharmacy moving forward?
Well, Christina, this is a loaded question because first and foremost, I will advise our listening audience to take off your masks, but don't throw them away. Put them in a drawer and save them. Because as we have seen for a number of years with the flu, COVID will be similar. It will come back every fall, if we like it or not. And we just have to be ready and prepared for whatever comes our way. And, you know, the pandemic caught the world by surprise and really just took over all of our lives. And to respond, both our states and our federal government allowed pharmacists and pharmacy technicians to truly step up and take on additional roles and responsibilities to serve our patients and, of course, be a true adjunct to public health and public health services. So being able to have technicians immunized in all 50 states for flu and for COVID, and being able to now embrace the pediatric population, all of the progress we made in testing and billing and scheduling all have enhanced our practice, and it really has set the stage for our profession to move forward, truly move forward. We don't want to go back to the way we were before the pandemic. That's for sure. I think the biggest question on my mind is, as you state, it's, you know, we're turning around. We have this, it's the springtime now, and we have the springtime euphoria, taking off the masks and getting back to normal. With that comes the sunset of some of the public health emergency decrees in the different states. Many states have run out of the opportunity to continue to have available this public health emergency decrees. The federal government, the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, there is conversations there as well that that will sunset. And when those decrees start to sunset, what will happen to all of these privileges that we have now enjoyed for a long time? 2 years is a long time. And, you know, we can't afford to move in reverse. We would hope that the different states, Board of Pharmacies, and the legislature have embraced these concepts and are working to continue with this advanced pharmacy privilege.
Well, I think not only is it, you know, something for pharmacies, pharmacists, and, you know, and the boards of pharmacy and the state legislature to think about, but also the fact that the general public has now gotten used to these services being offered by their community pharmacy. And so it's not just a matter of the fact that, you know, obviously it has moved the profession forward and neededly so, to really maximize the role of the technician and to allow for the pharmacist to do more of that clinical work and to really work at the top of their licensure, but the fact that the community good has been increased so much because of the access point of the pharmacy being so readily available, with the federal pharmacy program initiative that the federal government implemented. I was just looking at some of the statistics, you know, over almost 300 million doses of vaccinations for COVID-19 have been administered through that federal pharmacy program. And we know that almost 80% of all COVID-19 vaccines have been administered by either a pharmacy or a pharmacist, whatever their practice setting may be. And so I think we really need to think about, you know, the improved access to care as a portion of population health and really impacting health equity and dealing with some of those health disparities that we know exist due to social determinants of health. And the fact that, you know, one of the biggest indicators of someone's health being their zip code. And so I think we need to solidify these provisions, not just for the good of the profession, but the good of our communities.
Well, I look at your comments here and have two directions I'm gonna respond to. The first, of course, pharmacy before the pandemic has done a wonderful job servicing the senior community. Those that are 65 and older come to the pharmacy for their immunizations, their medications, advice. We really have a great bond, if you will, with the senior community. What we see now through the pandemic's lens is the rest of the population has figured out that pharmacies sell more than bubblegum and cosmetics. And even if you don't have a chronic disease, you go to the pharmacy and you can get all these services. You know, it's nothing to sneeze at, the number of immunizations provided by pharmacies over the last 2 years. It's astounding. And we have always struggled to attract the 19 to 64 year old cohort and truly service them, getting them to understand that, you know, they should be coming to us for their flu and other immunizations, as well as testing and any other medical needs. But now they really understand that. Going back to your social determinants of health focus, one of the really disheartening points is there are so many pharmacy and food deserts around the country that, you know, having access to care by and for all of the folks in our country is it's not always available. And that's very, it's one thing if the folks can't get to the pharmacy, they don't have communication means. There's a lot of other factors that play into social determinants of health. But the one that's truly disheartening, and you think that in the 21st century, we would figure out a way to beat this. But there are these deserts, and it's very unfortunate. The more rural the community, the less and less we see the access to care.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that sentiment and say, you know, I think that that's also, another reason why we should think about community collaborations. So, you know, ways to provide services that aren't just the pharmacy services, but to think about making sure that people's basic needs are being met. So one of the things that, you know, I'm really proud of is that I was able to partner with local organizations here that focused on minority communities. And we provided vaccination services in addition to things like food distribution, helping with travel, doing a lot of pop-ups. It really does, you know, serve as a model that we need to go to where the people are. And not just that, but to collaborate with community organizations, faith-based organizations, places where people go and they know, like, and trust someone. And then also wanted to just give a shout out for the possible collaboration with health departments. They are, being inundated right now because of this public health need, and they don't have the infrastructure and the staff to really do all of the work that they should be doing. And, you know, pharmacies and pharmacists can really act as an extension of those services and to work in tandem with those organizations in order to make sure that the community needs are being met, so that those services are not going unused, or that those services are not meeting the needs of the individuals that need it most.
Well, pharmacy and public health have had a long relationship. I think back in 2008, when we had the H1N1 issues, public health really came to pharmacy and took our relationship to a more of a collaboration where we really worked together, and we were able to service the majority of our patients together. So public health didn't have the infrastructure. They needed outlets. Community pharmacy was right there to embrace that call to action. And quickly and efficiently, we put together a collaboration where we were able to share vaccines and really immunize our communities. And unfortunately, of course, in the absence of disaster, what happens if people get a little complacent and, you know, we enjoy the good times. We don't think about what's going to happen or if it will happen. Will there be another disaster? And I think now the pandemic is truly change the way we're going to look forward, and we're going to anticipate disasters more frequently. And I think with that, the collaboration between pharmacy and public health needs to go up to the next level. We you and I have discussed, and I'm going to turn it to you in 2 seconds here, that every public health department should have a pharmacist, and pharmacy should be tied to the hip with the public health department. And, you know, I'm stealing your thunder. This is something that you have been a strong advocate for and have communicated that not only to myself, but to others. And I've been in conversations with you, and I commend you for that forward thinking. And we just need to find a way to get the community of pharmacy, and then on the other side, the community of public health, get them at a table and they really work together.
Yeah, and I think it really starts with, return on investment, right? And so I think that when, you know, these public health departments really see that the pharmacy, you know, component is such a large portion of communicable disease management, you know, almost every communicable disease that, you know, we track and manage as part of public health has a very large medication footprint. And so who better to help manage that and to be a potential outlet for treatment than the pharmacist, who is the medication expert. And so, you know, I don't think that it's too far off to think that this is something that we can aspire to. I absolutely think that, you know, there are so many benefits to having a pharmacist directly working within the Department of Health. You know, when I had my position with my county health department, I worked in almost every area that provided clinical services. I worked with family planning, I worked with HIV, I worked with STD, I worked with tuberculosis, immunization clinic, even the Office of Public Health Preparedness, which is how I understood all the operations and logistics around mass vaccination and mass distribution campaigns, because I was an incident commander during H1N1. And so, you know, having that background and having that knowledge, I think, has really helped me. And in particular, it's helped me to be called upon as an expert for healthcare media, contributing for on-air television appearances. And again, non-traditional role for pharmacists, but I really do think that we need to step into this moment and to maximize the opportunities that we have now that there is more focus on the profession within this space.
Well, but non-traditional roles of pharmacists, everybody's looking for one of those. So there'll be no shortage of pharmacists if public health decides that. But of course, you would have to have some experience and potentially a master's in public health, possibly. Who knows? But I want to go back a bit and merge a couple of these topics that we're discussing. Public health as a collaborator with pharmacy. But you know what? We're sitting here and we started this conversation talking about potential loss of privilege when these acts sunset. And who better to advocate for the profession of pharmacy as a collaborator and a partner than public health? So as much as we want pharmacy at the table within each of these public health departments, we need public health to be our advocate and truly talk about how pharmacy has really jumped up and embraced the challenge and is an extension, if I can say this, is an extension of public health. And we really need them to help us with these privileges. You know, we can't just have privilege in the time of disaster, because we won't be ready. We need privilege to our everyday practice. This Equitable Community Access to Pharmacist Services Act, it's a wonderful, wonderful act. And I think it needs to move forward. But again, it's just limited to COVID and emergencies. And how can we be ready if we're only going to be allowed to respond in an emergency?
I mean, that's a great question. And again, I think it goes back to having those strong legislative connections and really from the grassroots level, you know, thinking about state pharmacy organizations and how they're playing a very important role in solidifying these expanded scope of practice. And again, not just responding to the current pandemic, but the next one, because we know that there's going to be another pandemic. It's just a matter of time. It's cyclic. Obviously, we had H1N1 in 2009, and then we had, you know, 10 years later, we had COVID-19. So I really do think that there needs to be a legislative effort at the state and federal level in order to make sure that these are, you know, for lack of a better way to say it, etched in stone, because it can't just be a gentleman's handshake and say, oh, yes, we know how important you are. We know that we need you beyond the pandemic. And we promise we'll give you some of these, you know, privileges when the time comes. You know, that's not enough. We can't just, you know, continue to operate on promises and the thought and the dream that pharmacy is going to eventually be recognized for its full impact and potential. We need to put it in writing and we need to have it solidified in law.
We're the only ones. If you look at the continuum of healthcare professionals, and I'm throwing pharmacy in that bucket. I mean, look at how nurses have advanced practice, nurse practitioners, even physician assistants. And if you look at the education requirements to be a physician's assistant, it's nowhere near what a pharmacist has to do. And, you know, we're licensed. We go through residency training. We're board certified. We're truly still,
highly educated.
Yes.
Highly educated.
But you know, I've been around long enough that we used to talk about, and I haven't heard it so much today, you know, overeducated and underutilized.
Mm. You know?
But I will also add that we can't look at pharmacy as a single universe, because the practice of pharmacy at the corner of Main and Main is very, very different in the different pharmacies that you would go to. So you got your mega pharmacy chains, and then you got mass merchandisers and big box stores. You've got grocery pharmacy, and then you've got these independent community pharmacies. And if you look at the independent community pharmacies, that's where all of the true innovation today is really taking place. And those are the guys and gals that will truly just jump right in and take on those challenges to be advocates and collaborators with public health. And if you really want to see the change in pharmacy, their business model is smaller. They're very nimble. They can make those changes, and they need the opportunity, not just in an emergency. They need the opportunity today so they can sustain and be in business.
Yeah, I definitely think that the Equitable Community Access to Pharmacy Services Act that was introduced by Representative Kine is a good first step, but it's not as far as we really need to go. You had mentioned to me earlier that NCPA had just published an article this morning, actually talking about, you know, is there light at the end of the tunnel, you know, for COVID? And do we think that, you know, that we'll have pay parity for the services that we're providing post-emergency declaration? And, you know, it does seem like CMS is going to be releasing some guidance and some resources for what to do at the end of when that provision sunsets, and that there will be continued coverage for certain conditions under the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. So that was promising news. And then also just looking at, you know, the Public Health Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act in comparison to the Public Health Emergency Declaration, and how we can really work within those confines to continue to be nimble as we prepare for the next emergency, for whatever that may be.
Well, I'll tell you this, and you know me for a while now. I think we need to go for the whole thing. We can't just take these little pieces. We can't be satisfied. You know, as a profession of pharmacy, we're grateful for the recognition and the advancement in even the littlest parts of practice. But we really need a revolution here. It's a revolution of sorts. We need the federal government to we need CMS and the federal government to just sit down one day and just recognize the profession of pharmacy as true healthcare providers. You know, I look at, everybody has been talking about provider status for a long time, but parity as a healthcare provider, to be able to practice to the standards of care, as opposed to being able to practice by pages and pages, hundreds of pages of legislative regulations for the practice of pharmacy. And we just really need to find a way. We need a champion on the other side. And, you know, you have brought forth public health, in my mind, is a true, true collaborator and partner. And every time we talk, you remind me of that. And I think we need to go find our public health friends. And I think we need to embrace them, to embrace us, and to help us through this challenge. We can no longer just be a part-time assistant. We need full-time status as a healthcare professional, and to get paid regularly, to not only fill prescriptions, but also to manage medication use and be that community access of care for, as we've seen for during the pandemic. You know, it's nothing to sneeze about with 80%, it's 270 million people came to pharmacies to get immunized. That's huge. How can you just say, oh, great job, pharmacy, but oh, okay, we're going to go back to the way it was? No, we say no.
Well, amen to that.
There you go.
Well, Ed, this has been such a fantastic conversation. I will definitely have you back on the Public Health Matters podcast soon. Really just wanted to thank you for your time and your expertise. If people wanted to find you or follow you, since you are super active and speak your voice quite often, where can people find you or follow?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram, and you can find me at Pharmacy Times as well. I'm probably one of the easiest folks to find in the pharmacy profession.
And one of the kindest and most accessible, I would say.
Well, thank you so much for that. Thank you. Absolutely. I enjoy our collaboration and our friendship, and look forward to continuing for many, many years.
Stay safe, be well, and remember, public health matters.